Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you need to hear.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now, finishing strong here on a Tuesday. Sean J. Raj will be here to talk some college football with us in our next hour. Our need to know brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Online at EastonRoofing.com. Easton Roofing, no payment collected until you're 100% satisfied. And don't forget, commercial, residential, yes, they do it all. Easton Roofing, online at EastonRoofing.com or call 913-257-5426. It is the best in the business that you're getting when you go to Easton Roofing. And remember, not only locally owned and operated, but they've partnered with Big Brothers Big Sisters. And now a portion of every job that Easton Roofing does goes to Big Brothers Big Sisters. So find them online right now at EastonRoofing.com. Royals back at it tonight. We were just talking some Royals baseball. They're again a heavy favorite.
Yes.
Minus 196.
Bigger even than last day, yesterday.
Brady Singer versus Jonathan Cannon. He will make his major league debut, Jonathan Cannon. I can't lay 196.
Especially not against a guy named Cannon.
But there's way I would ever bet the other side. Can we agree on that?
Yes, that's a walk away.
The White Sox are unbettable.
No, you have to walk away.
Listen, let me give you a nugget. If you go to FanDuel and you bet the White Sox, here's a phone number I want you to put in your phone. 1-800-BETS-OFF.
Yes.
There's no scenario
Stay
where that
away.
Makes sense.
That is, you know how if somebody puts a whole bunch of money on something, it makes the betting service flag it and they have to investigate it. If you put $1 on the White Sox, they flag that. That is unusual betting.
Yeah. Is Jonte Porter playing for the White Sox?
Yeah.
We got to get over there
right.
And figure something out.
For sure.
What moron is betting the White Sox? He knows something. No, but listen, it's nice to have the ball club playing quality baseball. I really need him to stay healthy. I like hearing that Sam McDowell's a believer in the lineup. I'm a believer in most of it, but I don't know that I'm a believer in all of it.
I come back to this with the health and the depth, and I want this to continue, but I also do not want the Royals. I really want them sitting there at the end of July wanting to be sellers, because I think that I think Bobby Witt, Pasquantino, I think they're, you know, the squint and see it. I think there are pieces where you're like, okay, this is going to be part of the group that makes the playoffs and is can make noise in the playoffs. But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that I'm not sure that Lugo or their other, you know, pitching rental might be. And so I hope that remains their focus this year. I know that's a disappointing thing, but...
No, but I mean, I'm with you, and I don't get it. I mean, I disagreed with Rainey on this. I'm like, if you are 2.5 games out, right, we can't sit here when the Royals suck and be like, look at the Brewers, look at the Brewers, look at the Brewers. And then like, oh, okay, we're in it in a bad division, but does this bullpen look like it could go fight through the playoffs? Close games out?
No.
I mean, who are you starting in the playoffs? Right now it's Reagan, Singer, Lugo.
Probably.
You're 1-2-3. Okay, yeah. I think we're underdogs, but we're in the fight.
Yeah. Waka, if you need a Chris Young, if you need one of those game four type starts.
Waka could be the one. And I like McCullough. And then after that, I'm not convinced anybody's...
Or MacArthur.
MacArthur, you know, is looking like a legit playoff reliever, but who else is?
Really,
and so,
no one.
My point is not to run down the team. I'm excited. They've done a lot. But, like, they're coming from 56 wins.
Yeah.
56 wins.
Every team that's made that jump, this has been the year in between where you set yourself up for the launch.
And I brought this up to Rainey. I'm like, if you get an offer for Salvador Perez and you're a game and a half out or you're a game and a half up, are you dealing him? And he made a good point. He's like, if you didn't trade him when you were terrible, why would you trade him now when you're competing? And my answer is the same. If it makes you a better ball club, you do it. And that doesn't mean, let me put it this way. If it makes you a better organization, you do it. Small market baseball, and to me the Brewers have figured it out. And people didn't think the Brewers are going to be good this year because they traded Corbin Burns the year after they traded Josh Hader. And guess what? There they are up there at first. You want to know why? Because every decision they make is based upon being the best organization they can be. They figure if they give up a little bit at the big league club, but they win a lot down low, and they make the organization better with every trade, eventually that backs up at the big league level.
And it has.
And it has. And they're still winning. And so if you want sustained winning, you cannot just whistle by the fact that your system is not that good.
It's the last thing you can do. It's one of the first things you have to acknowledge and operate from.
So if a guy that's not going to be on your team in 2 years can bring you prospects back, at least one really good one, or several good ones, you're a better organization, and you have to make that move. And that's going to be a hard pill to swallow. And Royals fans are going to lose it. We haven't contended in... It'll be, you haven't contended since 17 is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But do you want to contend more than just this year? Or do you... I mean, in 03, the Royals got Kurt Laskanik and Jose Lima. And what do they do in 04 and 05? They lost 100 games.
Mm-hmm. If they're in the World Series in 2026 because of two guys they got in the Salvador Perez trade, it'll be one of the greatest things ever. So, oh, see, Salvi won a World Series here, and they spun him off and got these two guys, and now they're back in it.
Well, and then the point was made to me, well, but in 15 they traded prospects to go for it. Well, one, their system was much deeper.
Yes.
And two, that team is much further along.
Yeah, they were coming off of a pennant and had the best record in the American League at the time they made those trades.
Lights-out bullpen.
Yeah, and yes. That's the thing. We're talking about a game and a half back, a game and a half up. I might I'll probably change my mind if they're gunning for the if they've got the division close to sealed and they're gunning for the one seed at the end of July. I'm not saying I would definitively change my mind, but I'd look more into it.
Like if you do the right thing every time, it'll pay big dividends in the future.
Yeah.
Because it compounds itself. So, just my thoughts.
I think one thing, it's an odd comparison, but I think it works in the same way. One thing my dad taught me is you put away some for retirement, and then when you get a raise, don't spend all of that extra that you've got. Put that extra away. And if you say all the time, think about 10 years from now, and if you're constantly doing that, eventually 10 years from now becomes the present, and you're going to go, you know what? Things are looking pretty good right now, and they're looking pretty good for the future, too.
Yeah. Singer versus Cannon tonight. Royals minus 196 favorites in Chicago. Other baseball news, Braves second baseman Ozzie Albies has been placed on the 10-day injured list. He's got a fractured big toe. He was hit by a pitch in the second inning by Astros rookie Spencer Arrighetti,
who got lit up last week here at the K.
He kept playing, but Arrighetti.
But Arrighetti. Stick sang that song about him, so that's cool.
That's true.
Whitey Herzog, who guided the Royals to three AL West titles in the 70s, guided the Cardinals to three pennants and a World Series title in the 80s, has died. He was 92, inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2010. Great manager.
Yes.
Fun guy to talk to.
Absolutely.
I mean, just a really fun guy to talk to. Great stories.
Stories galore, man. And he could tell it.
Yeah. NBA, we've got the play-in games tonight. They're on TNT. Lakers at Pelicans. New Orleans, a one-point favorite. Warriors at Kings. Warriors just a three-point favorite. I don't even know if they should be favored.
Yeah, I had to look at that. I was like, is that right? Oh, yeah, they're on the road. Oh, yeah, they're on the road, yes. Championship pedigree. I don't know what's the minus three on the road. Two fairly even matched teams, and not there's a game tomorrow night, or I guess it's Thursday night. There's like a 36-team win team. They're like a 6.5-point, I think, dog. That's going to be awful. These games tonight should be really good, though.
Should be. We'll see. Last stand for some of the old guard in the NBA. Bucks are preparing to play without two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo. He is, you know, down with a calf strain. I mean, I heard, you know, it was amazing.
Seems like a lingering thing.
Some of the talking head shows, well, if the Bucks don't get out of the first round, you got to trade Damian Lillard. Or you got to recognize you gave up a lot for Damian Lillard, and it was probably going to take more than 1 year to put the other pieces around him and settle the blank down.
Yes.
Giannis has been hurt. I don't know. The instant gratification thing is amazing to me. Blake Griffin announced he's retiring, first overall pick in the NBA draft out of Oklahoma. Two and done at OU. He went 1-1 in the 09 draft, 19-8-4. He was named second team All-NBA three times, third team All-NBA twice, slam dunk champion. Mm-hmm. Is he an NBA Hall of Famer?
Probably not.
No, I mean, is he already? Have they already inducted him?
Yeah, right. And the basketball, yeah.
You're, not hard to get into that one.
I think he was inducted mid-dunk in the dunk competition.
That's a good point.
Halfway over that Kia.
Of course he's a Hall of Famer.
Did you play? You're in.
They're all Hall of Famers, according to the NBA. All of them. Every of them.
Every of the player.
College basketball news, BYU has its man, Kevin Young, Suns associate head coach. Highest paid assistant in the NBA, has been a candidate for NBA coaching jobs in the past two hiring cycles. BYU lands him with a sizable commitment to lead the Cougars into their second Big 12 conference season and beyond. He, you know, we were told yesterday by
Bill Riley,
KU guy, by the way,
yep.
Voice of the Utes, and of course ESPN afternoon drives there in Utah.
Lazy ass couldn't do Real Salt Lake anymore though.
It's a lot of work.
I know. Hashtag sarcasm.
He said you do have to be a member of the church to get the job. So Kevin Young, we assume, married.
He and his wife were married in RLDS Church in 2011, I think.
How about that?
So he's already on the team.
The highest paid assistant in the NBA. You know, we're thinking just college guys, but yeah, we'll see.
BYU's putting some money on that one. Yeah. They're going to be a formidable opponent in the Big 12. They're not messing around. You go out and get that hire. That raised a lot of eyebrows around the Big 12 last night.
Yep. Bad news for the K-State Wildcats as Arizona transfer Umar Ballo, the number one player in the transfer portal, committed to Indiana today. He was going to take some other visits, not going to do it. Ended his recruitment before visiting Louisville, K-State, North Carolina, Florida, and Arkansas. They were all out to get him. All wanted to sign out to get him.
Something negative.
Trying to sign him. You know what I mean? Not bring him down.
They're trying to.
Yeah.
Do you think K-State needs to beware of not, and look, Tang knows more than I do, and he's, I think, terrific, but you think they need to beware of winding up what Bill Snyder talked about? They're getting into guys' living rooms but can't close the deal?
Yeah, I think everybody needs that. You know, make sure you don't waste time on guys you can't get, but right now, this early on, I choose to consider it a strength that K-State was in the running with schools, you know, the caliber of, you know, the pedigree of Louisville. They're not, their caliber is not good. But, you know, North Carolina, Florida, Arkansas, you know, those are pretty good names to rub elbows with. You know, pretty good names to rub elbows with. So, yeah, I'll choose to look at it as a positive until he swings and misses a bunch of times. But so far, his team building's been pretty good. I think he was going to be a tournament team if they didn't run off Tomlin this year. And that would have been back-to-back tournaments with an Elite Eight. You know, finished very high in the conference last year. No, I don't. Not yet. I won't sound that alarm.
And not afraid to embrace the portal. I mean, he's already got, I think, two guys. One from Michigan, but I think there was a second guy. I can't remember. Yeah. But
He's in on. I'm seeing someone say he's in on Mark Mitchell.
Clearly, not afraid to embrace the portal, which is awesome.
Mark Mitchell played at Sunrise Christian, and isn't that the name of it in Wichita?
Yep.
And before that, Bishop Miege, KC kid. So yeah. I would think
On three has
all
him,
the locals are on him.
Yeah, On three has him 53-47 for Mitchell over Mizzou. I saw one
for Mitchell over Mizzou.
Yeah, for Mark Mitchell. K-State. They have their crystal ball.
Yeah. Which school is over Mizzou though?
K-State.
Well, you said Mitchell over Mizzou.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I meant 53-47 K-State over Mizzou to get Mitchell. Well, I think 24/7 had him 100% to K-State, which would those two sites are not on the same page on a lot of these. They're what they call their crystal ball of the transfer portal.
Well, I don't know how they do. I know 24/7 is just simple. The whatever percentage of experts guess a given school. So if you have five experts or even two experts, but both of them happen to guess the same school, you're 100%. So I don't know how On Three does theirs though.
Since the same guy started it,
probably the same.
I'll bet it's pretty similar.
I just always wondered if there's like a level of expert that you get more, your pick gets more weight than this guy over here.
We'll take a break. Sean, J. Raja will be with us. We talk college football next. Where do the local schools' head coaches rank? ESPN says all three are top 20. Does Sean, J. Raja agree? We'll talk about that and much, much more next here in the program. You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us here on a Tuesday as we make our way through the 5 o'clock hour. Time to talk a little college athletics, a little college football. We do it every Tuesday in the 5 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by our friends at Big O Tires. No matter what kind of car you drive, two things are always true. All tires eventually need replacing, and all vehicles need servicing. For quality service you can trust, visit your locally owned and operated Kansas City Big O Tires. You can spring into savings this month with their synthetic blend oil change for just $24.99. Big O Tires, 13 locations around KC. There's sure to be one near you. Make an appointment right now at BigOtires.com. Big O Tires, the team you trust. Let's talk to Sean J. Raja, CBS Sports National College Football Writer, is with us here. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let's start with the breaking news of the day. Michigan agreeing to the recruiting violations. They have received probation and penalties, and they're going to agree to it. Is that what we understand? And what does this mean for Michigan moving forward?
Well, it's funny. I think that you look back now, and they first received their notice of allegations in January 2023. They kind of dragged their feet through the process. They ultimately end up getting a revised notice of allegations in December. And it just kind of goes to show you how much of what they tried to do last season was trying to protect what could be a special season for them. All of this got pushed until after the season, all the hearings, the negotiated resolution, every bit of this. And you actually go and read their statements. The big hang-up before was that Michigan essentially said, we do not agree that Jim Harbaugh has not been cooperative and that he misled investigators. And in this resolution, which has now come to fruition in April, they basically said, I guess he did. I guess it wasn't that big of a deal. And so it was certainly a way to try to protect the season, to prevent Jim Harbaugh from being suspended even more during the season, and ultimately to give their team a chance to win a national championship. So right now, according to the statement put out by the NCAA, there's only one coach who did not agree to the negotiated resolution. We don't know that it's Jim Harbaugh, but that sure seems like something that Jim Harbaugh might do. But other than that, at least on this investigation, Michigan's case of the NCAA is closed.
Yeah, I kind of – listen, we know why they did it. I mean, he's gone. They have nothing to protect in him now. So do what's best for the program. Fall on your sword and let's move on. Like, I don't think this means that they're like, oh, God, Jim Harbaugh had our arm twisted. They protected the program. They protected the season, which a championship season is great for your program. That's protecting the program. Would we expect any other school to do it any other way?
No, I mean, I think that if there is a program and a team that understood the meaningfulness of one individual season, this is, I think, what teams would try to do ultimately. And if it was an understanding that, look, we've got a lot of seniors on this team, this is the culmination of 3 years, Jim Harbaugh has really been sniffing around the NFL, this might be the last chance that we have. So I think in some ways it was also a perfect storm of outside factors that made that such an obvious last dance type season. But if a program was put in a similar position, if Alabama, if Ohio State, if, you know, any one of these programs was able to, you know, essentially mortgage some of their reputation a little bit in order to win the championship, I think that's a trade-off that most people would make.
Yeah, I do too. Was it just a – is Jim Harbaugh that good? And it was a special season. We've seen two Northern schools win championships in the last, what, 20-some-odd years. One of them had Urban Meyer at Ohio State, big program. One of them had Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Both those guys have proven through multiple jobs that they're the real deal when it comes to coaching. You may not like everything about them, and they may not be squeaky clean, but they can kick ass and take names when coaching a football team. Is Michigan back? Or is that what it takes? You better have one of the two or three best coaches in football, and then you might be able to squeeze one championship out every decade.
Well, I think more than anything, I think that when you look at NIL, when you look at the transfer portal, when you look at kind of the chaos, frankly, that happens in the Southeastern Conference, I think that that's telling us that there is room for other methods. You look at Michigan, this was a team that didn't try to go, throw all this money at the highest end of five stars or try to fix everything with transfers or any of that sort of stuff. They tried to keep their roster together. The NIL that they used was retention-based more than anything else. And ultimately, it meant that whenever they were able to be the senior team that had three-year experienced guys who had a second-year starting quarterback, they were able to match up with, you even look like a team at like Alabama, right? Maybe a team that's more talented but was not more experienced, and that showed in that game. And then I think even on the other side of the bracket, you know, you have a Washington team that is also a Northern team that was built a little more as well through, you know, let's try to maintain and let's try to grow together and build on last season. And they played a Texas team that was peaking, but also, again, wasn't as experienced as this team. So I think that with the transfer portal, with NIL, there are different types of ways to build rosters. I think in the past decade or two, it's in the recruiting era, I think is what you have to point to. It's been so consolidated. The best players are ending up at schools that are geographically near to them, which is largely in the South, and the Big Ten has suffered as a result. Well, now I think there are multiple ways to go about things and to attract talent and to retain and develop, and I think that that's going to even out the playing field. We didn't just have one Northern team in the national championship game last year. We had two, and I think while maybe Michigan under Sherrod Moore isn't going to be the same thing as Michigan under Jim Harbaugh over these last 3 years, I think that more teams have potential to step up as well.
And I think that's a fair assessment. And we also were watching Nick Saban on a swan song, and you know there were a lot of factors. Like just because it happens once, that's like I said, you know, Urban Meyer didn't do it five times; he did it once. You know, Jim Harbaugh did it once. And by the way, that other Northern school, Washington, lost their coach to a Southern school, which speaks to the fact that you know the industry. Maybe it's just the finances of the industry, but the industry still views it as a Southern sport, right?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I think the other piece, too, is, look, Washington is kind of in that second-tier program versus in Alabama. And the reality is, if we just talk about these, you know, blue blood level or semi-blue blood level programs, there's just straight up more of them in the South. I mean, Michigan and Ohio State certainly hold that role in the North. And another piece to mention is that Oregon had their coach, looked at by Alabama, and he decided to stay put for a variety of reasons. But, I mean, again, it's not just Alabama. It's not just LSU. It's not just Georgia. It's also Florida. It's also, you know, all these programs that have won national championships. I think the number is, since 1998, seven different teams from the SEC have won a championship. And I don't know if it actually includes Texas and Oklahoma. So it's the depth of quality programs in the South that I think puts them apart right now. But again, you know, I think that you look at the North and there are programs that can compete. Michigan and Ohio State, and Oregon heading forward. I'm going to be fascinated to see whether Penn State can pull things together. I'll be fascinated to see whether, long-term, what Nebraska and Matt Rhule end up being. I don't know if they'll get to title caliber, but I think they have a chance to be really good. So, I mean, that's going to be the hard part. Isn't just, can we have one or two good programs? Can we have six to eight good programs in our conference? And that's much harder than what the SEC pulled together.
Do we have, you know, and this isn't a, they're a Western program, but they're on the south end of the West, and USC I'm talking about, but are we having signs that, you know, not only did Washington lose their coach, but they didn't lose their coach at USC, but they didn't have the kind of year they wanted, and they're not getting the kind of traction they want in the portal and recruiting. Is there signs that those Western Big Ten schools are going to have some trouble?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'll put Oregon aside for a second because I think that Oregon, for a variety of reasons, is in a really good position, partially of which is that they have, you know, the founder of Nike as a booster. But, you know, when you look at the rest of those schools out west, again, like you mentioned, this was the first actually bad season of Lincoln Riley's career. We've heard complaints. We've heard, you know, people upset before. But going 8-5 is a little different than going 11-2 like they've done in some previous years. And I do think that they understand some of their issues. He hired a fantastic defensive staff. But so far, like you mentioned in the portal, the pitch isn't working. They lost the number one rated interior offensive lineman from the recruiting class. He opted to enter the transfer portal at quarterback. They ultimately were not able to reel in Will Howard, who ended up at Ohio State. So they're going to be rolling with potentially Miller Moss, their backup from last season. So, you know, look, this is a USC team and a Lincoln Riley team that looks as ordinary as any that we've seen in a while. And to touch on some of the other Western programs joining the Big Ten, you mentioned Washington. This is a complete rebuild under Jed Fish after graduating so much of their roster, and whatever they did bring back, a lot of it ended up in the transfer portal as well. UCLA is even more than that because they lose Chip Kelly to be an offensive coordinator at Ohio State and promote a coach who was recently on their staff, Deshaun Foster. So this is not a group that I think is ready to compete at the highest level when you talk about those three schools. Oregon, again, is the one that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. But even they haven't gotten through to that top group as yet.
Yeah, I know. I think it's going to be, we may be 5-6 years into this and those schools go, what do we do? What the hell did we do? Because the early returns are not fantastic. I want to talk about, this is a story that's written on ESPN. Sorry, not on CBS. We'll talk about some of the other stories that you've written here in a minute. We're talking to Shahan Jayaraja from CBS, national college football writer. But they did a breakdown. The way they phrased it was ranking the top 10 coaches in college football for 2024, right? And, you know, they went through, number 9 was Lance Leipold. Is Lance Leipold a top 10 coach?
I think that you have to consider him that. And there's two pieces that I'll say for that. One, he has a track record. It's not just what he's done at Kansas, but it's what he did at Buffalo, getting them to 10 wins in that contention. It's what he did at Wisconsin-Whitewater before that. And now you add on top of that winning 9 games at Kansas for the first time since 2007. I mean, it's incredible what he's been able to do. The other piece to mention is, and I've had this conversation with a couple of people over the offseason, when you look at the top 10 coaches or that top group of the sport right now, Kirby Smart's number one. There's literally no doubt about that. And once you get past that, every coach kind of has their drawbacks. You know, Dabo Swinney obviously has 2 titles, but the last couple of years have kind of been a disaster. You talk about Steve Sarkisian building something, but he also, you know, hasn't won a playoff game. He hasn't played their national championship game. Kalen DeBoer, I think, actually gets a little disrespected in these discussions because he did play in the title game last year, but same deal. He's taking over a new program. He hasn't done anything at Alabama. You know, then you get into the Brian Kellys, you get into the Dan Lannings, you get into the James Franklins, all this sort of stuff. So everybody, nobody has a perfect case outside of Kirby Smart at this point. Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban, those guys are gone. And I think that that does open the door for a Lance Leipold. I think it does open the door for even a Chris Kleiman to be in that conversation, because being at a program that doesn't have as much resource as some of these other programs that we mentioned and winning at that highest level, I think that counts for something.
Yeah, it does. And I think Leibold's, I got no problem with him being there. I just think it's so noteworthy. I have a little bit of a problem with Lane Kiffin being 8 on this list. I think that's a little high. Steve Sarkisian being 7, I think that's a little high. It seems like overwhelmingly influenced by this past year. Dabo Swinney's still up there. That's not influenced by this past year. But Kyle Whittingham's number 3. Do you view Utah as the team to beat in the Big 12 as a program moving forward?
Yeah, well, it is interesting. I will mention on the Kyle Whittingham front is, you know, obviously he had kind of his two great seasons in the past 3 years. It's funny for me to kind of, the way that people talk about Whittingham now versus maybe the way that people talk about Mike Gundy, when their resumes look pretty similar, just in kind of a different order. But, you know, when you look at Utah heading into the Big 12, if you like you mentioned, I think that they are the team to beat. I would have liked Arizona maybe as much, if not a little more than them, heading into the year. But obviously, after losing Jed Fish and so much of that roster, I just don't know what to expect from that team. So I think that Utah does stand as the number one. Not an overwhelming number one. There are multiple teams that can get into that conversation. But they bring back a decent amount on the defensive side of the ball. I love that they added Dorian Singer at receiver coming in from USC and previously Arizona. And look, it's a spring game. I'm not going to take too much away from it. But Cameron Rising coming back and playing really, really well in their spring game with the opportunities that they gave him, that at least lets me feel like, okay, this is a player who is at least healthy enough, if they can protect him, to play well. So I think that if Cameron Rising is close to what he was before the injury, and if Brent Keith is able to come back at tight end and be similar to that, you know, again, this team won 8 games last year while playing a converted safety as their best offensive player. And now they're going to potentially have a chance to come in and be a little healthier and be a little bit deeper. So I do view this as the potential front runner of the Big 12.
Yeah, for this year. But I'm talking, are they the IT program? Like, if somebody's going to assume the role of OU or UT, which program would you put your money on?
Yeah, I think that they're in the conversation. Part of this is, I will say, I don't think that there is an obvious program. I don't think that there's going to be an OU. I don't think that there will be a program like that, because I don't think that there's a program with as many implicit advantages in this conference as OU had over the past 20 years. Utah would probably be my front runner when you talk about both the combination of resources and, of course, coaching. Kansas State would certainly be up there as well, because I think that highly of Chris Klieman. And Oklahoma State, as long as Mike Gundy's around, I think also has a really, really great chance to continue to be in that conversation. But again, I don't think there's going to be a dominant program, but if you ask me over the next 10 years who's going to be number one, I'd probably narrowly take Utah.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. The only thing they're missing is the proximity. You know, Oklahoma had the proximity to Dallas, to Texas, to Texas talent. I mean, I don't know, and maybe, I don't know, maybe California talent's going to come streaming over to Utah for less travel, but there's still decent travel when you're Utah. There's always been travel, but now there's more than there used to be. I mean, listen, I like them with this head coach, but there's nothing about the history of the program that says they're more than this head coach, does it?
Well, I think that you do look, of course, Kyle Whittingham took over for Urban Meyer, who built something really long-term and lasting there. And so, you know, I don't think this is necessarily just one guy holding up a bad program. Like, I don't think it's that by any means. I mean, to make a comparison, you know, whenever Chris Klieman took over Kansas State, it was in a substantially better place in terms of infrastructure than it was certainly before Bill Snyder took over. But I think that what I'd say is this, is geography is always going to work against Utah. You're absolutely right. But I think it works less so these days than it would have 10 years ago, you know, because I think that, one, this is a nationalized sport. We have kids committing to USC from Los Angeles to go play conference games in Piscataway. I think this is just a reality of the situation right now. And I think you even look at, you know, we talked about, of course, for years, the struggles of the California programs to keep talent in California. And you have Bryce Young going across the country because he felt like the best opportunity for him to compete was in Alabama and not in his hometown program of USC. So I think that factor matters a lot, but I think that it matters less now than it did before. And the other piece of it, too, is, one, you're going to be playing many conference games in the state of Texas. That's going to be a huge draw in terms of just being able to be a Texas high school recruit and come play for Utah and still play in Texas. And they have done a great job historically in California, like you mentioned. I mean, they are not far at all from California. It's a relatively easy place to get to. And I think that that's another factor to take into account when you talk about more far-flowing programs is, you know, it's very easy to fly into Salt Lake City. The airport is close. It's an international airport. You're able to get out, you know, to Polynesia, for example. They've done a great job of recruiting Samoan players.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that they have found a pathway to recruiting success that doesn't just rely on we're going to get in the car and drive to St. George, Utah. And I think that that's a model that, again, it's not going to have the same upside as, look, if TCU gets things completely super-duper going, I think certainly that program has a higher recruiting ceiling than Utah does. But if they aren't, and, you know, you look at the programs right now in the Big 12, there's some good programs. I don't think that there's an overwhelming program. Utah can be competitive with
okay.
any of those programs.
Eli Drinkwitz, he's, you know, had a great year. The recruiting looks like it's good. He's going to have probably at least one, if not two guys, walk across the stage at the NFL draft and have Mizzou announced. Was this his zenith, or, you know, is this just the beginning of what's going to be consistent double-digit win seasons?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'll be fascinated to see it. I think that at least this upcoming year, I have a lot of expectation that they're going to continue to be as good. I do think that when you look at what they bring back, and especially Luther Burden coming back, that's huge. The question for me about them being able to build and improve on this is, you know, one, you lost Blake Baker, the great defensive coordinator, immediately after having this season to LSU. The fact that even within their own conference, they're being poached from doesn't make me feel the greatest about where they're positioned. And I think the other part, too, is that, you know, their schedule this year isn't bad, but it's only going to continue to get harder being in the SEC. I think that they were given in some ways some gifts with how the SEC East worked itself out and playing Arkansas at a time every year where Arkansas was not necessarily a highly competitive program. No, I think the bigger question is, can this be a program long-term that can continue to compete for playoff spots? It might not be a season that ends in the top 12 like it was last year, but can it be a program that can do that every couple of years? I do think that what they've built there has the ability to do it. And the other piece that I have to like about it is you have seen them get some wins in recruiting and in the transfer portal. I mean,
yeah.
Aiden Green coming in at offensive guard from Oklahoma, that's not the kind of move, you know, God bless him, that Barry Odom was making. That's not the kind of move that we've seen from this program. So I think that interest and investment is rising from the fan base, from the boosters, et cetera. And so that, I think, is going to raise the floor. When you talk about the ceiling, I'm going to be kind of keeping an eye to see whether they can hit a higher ceiling or whether it is kind of, hey, we're going to have a really good 10-3 year. And that should be something to be excited about.
Shahan, great stuff as always. I wish we had more time, but we'll talk again soon, my friend.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Shahan Jayaraja, national college football writer for CBS, does a great job breaking down all of college football. We'll take a break, come back, talk about exactly how much Caitlin Clark is going to make. We do it next. It's The Kicker here in the program.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, Joe's Kansas City Barbecue Burnt End of the Hour Answer. NBA, who's the only player to finish in the top 10 of the MVP voting in each of his first 10 seasons? I'm sorry, top
Kareem
five of the MVP.
Kareem or Wilt would sound like good choices.
77 years old today, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. 6 MVPs and a Rookie of the Year.
In his first 10 years?
In his first 10 years.
He won his I thought he won
first 11 years,
yeah.
MVP. But he was in the top 10 or top 5 each of his first 10 seasons in the NBA. He was in the top 5 of the MVP.
Yeah, an amazing career. Amazing career, no doubt. Playing for
Joe's
Kansas City Barbecue. Get you some tonight. Joe'sKC.com. Send it anywhere in the country if you're going to be cooking outside. Going to be a little chilly later in the week, mm-hmm. So fire up the grill. Warm up by that. If you need the grill, the sauces, the rubs, the utensils, the Kansas City Barbecue Store. Joe's, great creation there at 119th and Strangline, has you covered. They even got the meats, the fuels. It's where I get my grills. I got a grill and a Traeger. They're absolutely fantastic. They did a great job of getting me exactly the cookers I needed. If you want or love to cook outdoors, get to the Kansas City Barbecue Store at 119th and Strangline, online at thekansascitybbqstore.com. We leave you with this. Caitlin Clark, number one overall in the WNBA draft. Did you watch any of that, by the way?
I did, too. I watched the whole first round.
I did, too. It was great. 4 years, $338,000. That's her deal. $338,000. Less than the league minimum in the NBA for the most dynamic and watched player in women's college basketball history, more watched than most men's players.
Yes.
Two things. It speaks to how far the WNBA still has to go. Right? I think that's of note. She'll make $76,500, $78,000, $85,800, and then an option year for $97,500, which presumably, barring injury,
yes,
they would be picking up. She's going to make millions in endorsements, right? But two things jump at me. One, how far the NBA has to go, but also WNBA has to go. But also, think about it. That's what it takes to be profitable. If you can give $50 million to, like, Derek Booker, how freaking profitable are the NBA teams?
Oh, my goodness.
Our NFL teams, our Major League Baseball teams. If this is what it takes to make a profit down in the WNBA or to stem the tide, some of the teams still maybe not making profits, how much money do you think they're making in the leagues where they pay the guys $50, $40, $30 million a year, where they give hundreds of millions of dollars? How much do you think the owners are making if they're still able to make a profit and pay that kind of money? It's mind-boggling.